Sports Talk 750.
Hi, I'm looking for Ray Finkel and a clean pair of shorts.
There was a time in this country when sports were revered. But people today, their values were all out of whack.
Artest looking, gets it to Bryant. Bryant dribbling, has to put it up with the buzzer. Banks it in! And the Lakers win the game!
But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward.
Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier! Down goes Frazier!
Put that coffee down.
Coffee's for closers only.
John Stockton sends the Utah Jazz to the NBA Final!
And I'm just ferocious. I want your heart. I want to eat his children. Praise be to Allah. Yeah!
Welcome to another edition of Drive Time Sports. KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Always happy to join you on these afternoon drives for both local and national sports talk. And today we're going to continue on with our college football conversation. I wish we had an hour-long college football show, to be honest with you. I could talk college football all day long. Yesterday, we talked a lot about the Pac-12 and the possibility of going to an 8-team playoff. Today, we're going to talk more Pac-12, but specifically the Utah Utes. Coach Kyle Whittingham of the Utah Utes will join us live over the telephone here in about 10-15 minutes. Coach is going to join us. We'll talk about the ending of the 2016 regular season for the Utes. Yeah, it was a little bit of a disappointment. You go from potentially jumping into the Rose Bowl to now it looks like the Foster Farms Bowl, perhaps. We'll talk about that and more coming up with Coach Witt. Always love getting Coach Witt on the show as well. So that's coming up for you. Also, we'll talk some NFL football. How about last night's Monday night contest? The Green Bay Packers are a team that you just can't kick dirt on. You can't. I still think they're a legitimate threat in the AFC North. That was a huge victory for them last night. They needed it in the worst way, and they found a way to get the victory. Green Bay topping Philadelphia last night 27-13. Aaron Rodgers throws for 313 yards. Devontae Adams, 113 yards on the outside. Green Bay doing some work. We'll take a look at the NFL standings and the playoff picture. At this point in time, you can eliminate a couple of squads from both conferences. Like in the NFC, you had a huge game between the Rams and the Saints. The loser of that game was basically eliminated. And the Saints torched the Rams. Kind of felt the same way about Green Bay last night. They had to get a victory. If you dipped a 4-7, you're finished. Carolina, Los Angeles, both at 4-7, they're done. Arizona has an outside chance just because they have a tie. But the playoff picture is starting to tighten just a tad. In fact, a tie may actually play the difference in a team like Washington getting to the postseason. More NFL football talk coming up here in just a bit. We'll start today's show by looking at the national sports headlines, and here's a big one. The New York Mets have locked up Cespedes. Opt out of his contract. Remember when we had Bill Lasky, former big league pitcher, on the show like a month ago, and we were talking about Cespedes opting out to become a free agent, leaving a lot of money on the table? Well, he's going to get a lot of money. He had received a 3-year, $75 million deal from the Mets last season that gave him the right to opt out after collecting $27 this past year. Now he has signed a 4-year, $110 million deal. He's going to be with the Mets for the foreseeable future. It's actually the top average annual value ever for an outfielder and ties the top AAV ever for a free agent position player. The second highest AAV for any position player behind Miguel Cabrera, who was a Triple Crown winner, for crying out loud. And when I say AAV, I'm talking about the average annual value per contract. So Cespedes, he's got to be very happy. I know Mets fans were relieved to see that he's staying put. Solid signing all the way around for both parties. Let's move back over to the NFL. We talked about the Rams just a moment ago, mentioned the Rams anyways, and that loss to the Saints, which basically eliminated them from the playoff picture. The honeymoon is over in Los Angeles. It's over. It was about a year ago, not quite a year ago, about 10 months ago, that the Rams officially got approval to move back to L.A., and everyone, including myself, just gushing about the fact that they were leaving St. Louis and going back to L.A. That was the first major professional sports team in that market, and that's where they should be. People are very unforgiving in L.A., very unforgiving. In fact, this is a team that was at one time 3-1. They're now 4-7, and the turmoil has now leaked over between a former player, a legend, and Eric Dickerson, and head coach Jeff Fisher. This is a bizarre story. So Dickerson actually served as color commentary for the Rams during the preseason. And now he's saying he's done with the team until the Rams part ways with Jeff Fisher. I don't think I've ever heard anything like this before. Initially, Dickerson had some comments about the Rams. And again, he's been a huge supporter of the Rams returning to LA once they got back to Los Angeles. Nobody seemed to be more happy about it than Eric Dickerson. But he basically said that, and I don't have the exact quotes in front of me, but he said that the Rams were boring offensively. He wasn't sure if quarterback's coach Chris Winkie, you remember him from Florida State, wasn't sure if Winkie had the necessary credentials to coach a number one overall pick in Jared Goff, and that fans would lose interest. He basically said fans would lose interest because offensively there's no creativity and it's a boring team. Now, according to Eric Dickerson, Fisher called him up, and here's the quote from Dickerson. I get on the phone, I say hello. He says, hey, Eric, this is Jeff Fisher. I said, how you doing, Jeff? He said, I just wanted to call you. I want to tell you a few things here. I don't have time for this, but I'm going to tell you, you are not going to be talking about the football team, talking about our team, talking about my coaches, and expecting to get things from this football team. We're not going to give you anything. We're not going to support you in anything. As long as I'm here as a coach, we feel uncomfortable with you coming on the sidelines. That's a direct quote. That's what Eric Dickerson has told multiple national media outlets, and he's not too happy about it. He asked if he was finished, and when he was finished, he went out on a spat and said, I really don't need anything from the Rams organization. Dickerson went on to say the only reason that he goes to games is because of the fans. This is just bizarre that Jeff Fisher had to talk about this at his weekly press conference, because fans in LA love Eric Dickerson. And because Dickerson, who's never short on words, I mean, Dickerson's a guy, he's a straight shooter. He's going to say exactly what he feels. Said the Rams are boring, which they are. Offensively, they're atrocious. Fisher apparently took offense to that, and he actually had to address it during a press conference. I think that's what's so funny about this whole thing. A former player going get up with a coach? Here's Jeff Fisher at his press conference.
I don't know where that's coming from. I saw Kevin responded via Twitter. A couple hours ago, I had a really good conversation with Eric last week. We welcome the alums. We welcome the tradition and the history. And you know, I mean, Eric's not been to practice. He's always welcome. Yeah, I welcome in the building. Love to have him come in. Love to have him come to practice. Love to have him come in the meetings. I mean, Eddie George has been in my meetings more than Eric Dickerson has.
Somebody's not telling the truth, and I have a funny suspicion that it's Jeff Fisher. Look, he better welcome alumni, because that's the selling point right now in Los Angeles for a team that just relocated and is about to build a $3 billion stadium. Right now, the only thing that is putting butts in the seats is the fact that it's new once again. It's the shiny new penny in Los Angeles. And the alum. Because Los Angeles embraces the legends from the Rams franchise, like Eric Dickerson. They embrace that. I was at the first regular season game in LA this year. You had the Hall of Fame ceremony. Orlando Pace was there. Marshall Faulk, Eric Dickerson, Jackie Slater. These guys had a Hall of Fame ceremony at halftime with the Canton bust, and people eat that up. Because the Rams are a boring football team, and they're not very good. And again, we've had this conversation. Their defense is good, but defense does not sell tickets, unfortunately. People like points. This team's not putting up points. Jeff Fisher's a beaten man. He's on his last leg as head coach. I would be stunned if this guy comes back next season as head coach of the Rams. He hasn't gotten the contract extension that he wanted. And I think Eric Dickerson, which again, fans are going to side with Eric Dickerson. I haven't talked to any of my friends or any of I guess you could call them colleagues, guys that I work hand in hand with in LA. I haven't talked to any of them about the fans' perception on this story, but I guarantee you fans are siding with Eric Dickerson. And this story more or less has to do with the fact that Jeff Fisher's about done. One of the losingest head coaches in NFL history, and he's not getting the job done again. They've lost 6 out of 7 games. And he tried to protect his job by benching the number one overall pick for like 10 weeks. That was a job protection move. You can go to the front office and say, you're going to fire me before I'm able to develop the guy that we traded six picks for? That's all it was. Jeff Fisher's time in L.A., I think it's rapidly coming to an end. Let's move over to the NBA side of things. Tonight, the Utah Jazz will look for their fourth consecutive victory as they take on the Houston Rockets. This is just a different team when George Hill is out on the court for the Jazz. Last night, he was fantastic again, had 24 points. Utah tops Minnesota by 9. Gordon Hayward was great last night as well. He had 24 points. But when George Hill is on the court, this is a completely different Utah Jazz team. Remember, I pegged the Jazz to win 48 to 50 games at the beginning of the season. They only get to that mark if George Hill stays healthy the remainder of the season. He's that important. He was the Western Conference Player of the Week once already this season. 18 games into the season, the Jazz would be the number 7 seed if the playoffs were to begin today. They'll keep moving up the ladder. Tonight, Houston, they're 11-6, I believe, on the season. So they'd be like a 4 seed. James Harden has just played out of his mind so far. In other NBA action tonight, Detroit will take on Charlotte, 5 p.m. start time there. The Clippers will be at Brooklyn at 5:30. Cleveland at Milwaukee at 6. The Pelicans with Anthony Davis, who's on a tear this season, although his team is very bad. They'll play host to the Lakers. Orlando was at San Antonio, and then again, Houston at the Jazz, 7 p.m. tip-off. That game is on national TV, on NBA TV, but you'll also be able to listen to it right here as David Locke and Ron Boone bring you the live play-by-play call. We've got to pause for just a moment. We do have a great show lined up for you. When we return, Coach Kyle Whittingham will join us, and we'll talk about the end of the Utah Ute season. And I'm also going to ask Coach Witt if he prefers a certain bowl game, because Utah's in the mix for 3 of them. That's coming up next here on Drive Time Sports. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. With Thanksgiving break now in the past, the local high school sports season will continue tonight, and the Emory Spartan wrestling team will be at home as they play host to a duel against North Sevier. The Spartans opened up the wrestling season last week as they played host to the Manti Templars, and the varsity team eased their way to a victory as they took home several victories by pinfall. In last week's matchup, Emory dominated Manti for a 53-21 win. As far as the results go, Dax Hall, Chase Christiansen, Zach World, and Gus Dalton scored consecutive victories by pinfall for Emory. Newt Ovison also scored by pinfall. The Emory Spartans also received a brilliant performance from senior captain Ty Meekum, who won 2 exhibition matches, winning both at separate weight classes. Tonight's dual meet will be the lone home wrestling match of the week for Emory. We stick with Emory High School athletics, but move over to basketball. Tonight, the Lady Spartans will look to make it 2 in a row to open up the season as they travel on the road to meet South Sevier. Emory opened up the season last week with a blowout victory over South Summit. Tonight will be the second game of the season, and it will set the stage for Friday's home opener as Emory plays host to North Summit. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We'll have more on the Lady Spartan basketball squad throughout the week, including the live play-by-play call this Friday when they tip off the home season, again against North Summit, beginning at 7 p.m. We switch up schools and move over to Carbon High, where today the swimming team will jump back into the pool following a miniature break due to Thanksgiving. The Dinos have had a busy swim season up to this point in time of the year, already participating in 4 meets. Most recently, the swim team played host to their first meet of the season as they welcomed Uinta, Canyon View, and Gunnison to the Desert Wave Pool. That took place last Friday before Thanksgiving. During that competition, the Lady Dinos used 5 first-place finishes to accumulate 369 points, which was good enough for 2nd overall. Uinta grabbed first place in that meet. The Carbon Boys team failed to record a first-place finish, but did grab 283 total points to finish in 3rd. Again, the Carbon Swim team will continue the season today. Once again, they are at home as they participate in the 5th meet of the season. Following today's meet, the team will then travel on the road for the Uinta Invitational this weekend. Also tonight, the Carbon Dino Wrestling Squad will participate in their 2nd meet of the season. They will travel on the road to take on the Union Cougars. This will be the first of 2 meets this week for Carbon. Following tonight's meet, they'll travel to the Moab Invitational this Friday and Saturday. We move over to the national sports scene, and last night on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, the Utah Jazz defeated the Minnesota Timberwolves by a final score of 112-103. Last night's victory improves the Jazz to 10-8 on the season, and the Jazz seem to finally be playing good basketball after a sluggish start. Last night, Gordon Hayward and George Hill both poured in 24 points. George Hill shot 46% from the field, while Gordon Hayward shot 42%. The Jazz also got a double-digit performance by Trey Lyles, who poured in 13 off of the bench. The Jazz will look to continue their winning ways tonight as they play host to the Houston Rockets. That'll be the first of three consecutive home games. Next, the Jazz will take on the Miami Heat. That'll be on Thursday, December 1st. And then they'll wrap up the three-game homestand as they play host to the Denver Nuggets on Saturday. Following that, the Jazz will travel on the road next Monday to take on the Los Angeles Lakers. And remember, you can continue to follow the Jazz all season long right here on KOAL. David Locke and Ron Boone will bring you the live play-by-play calls. That has been a look at sports in the local Castle Country area. Reporting from the KOAL Newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 and 103.9 FM. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
A special edition of the Coach's Corner here on Drive Time Sports. Talked a little bit about this during the intro to the show. More college football talk for you. We talked a lot about the Utah Utes on the show yesterday, but who better to talk about the Utah Utes football program than with the head coach, and that's Kyle Whittingham, who is once again taking out the time to join us over the telephone today. Coach, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I appreciate the time again.
Well, appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Definitely, Coach. We'll talk about the rather disappointing end of the season, Coach. I mean, it was 3 weeks ago we were talking about a potential Rose Bowl berth, and then unfortunately back-to-back losses. How disappointing is it for a head coach to be in the mix? I mean, we're talking about a Pac-12 South title and then to have things kind of go south over the last 2 weeks.
It is tough, but it's better than not being in the mix. I can tell you that for certain. And so, you know, the positive is for 3 years now we've been knocking at the door and in the hunt into November, but the negative is we haven't been able to break through and get there. And so, you know, it's back to the drawing board this off season. We got to go back out and recruit and tweak things and make adjustments schematically and just keep trying to do everything we possibly can to get over that hump.
You know, for me, Coach, as a member, a media member, as someone that follows this team in and out, I think the worst part for me to watch over the last 2 weeks was the senior group. I mean, I really felt like these guys deserved the right to go to the Pac-12 championship. I look at what they've accomplished over the 3-4 years that they've been, you know, had intricate roles within your team. They may be responsible. This may be the senior group that we look back on and say, okay, that was the group that was responsible for turning Utah from a middle-of-the-road Pac-12 team to a legit contender year in and year out.
Well, you're exactly right, and I've told them just that. You know, I talked to the seniors and thanked them for everything they've done for the program, and they have won a bunch of games, you know, over their careers here, and most of them when they started here were a part of that 5-7 team that those two 5-7 years that we had to endure, and then we had a breakthrough of sorts, and since that point we've been able to, like I said, be in the hunt for the championship, and it is very much because of the efforts of that group of guys that we're in the position we're in.
You talk about being in the hunt, Coach. I don't think you can get much closer. You guys lost 4 games by a total of 19 points.
Yeah, I know. I know, and that's another thing that makes it difficult is so close, but nobody cares about being close. You know, you got to get over that hurdle, and you got to be able to get the job finished in its entirety, and so that's our challenge going forward.
You know, it's somewhat unique, Coach. It seems like throughout the entire season, the Pac-12 was a little bit disrespected. I mean, even going back to the first playoff rankings when Washington was on the outside looking in and Texas A&M was in, now all of a sudden you have probably the hottest team of the country next to Alabama and USC, who you guys beat, and then you have Washington that has creeped back into the top four after suffering a loss. The Pac-12 looks pretty good, I think, right about now.
I think they do as well, and if, in fact, Washington is able to take care of business in the championship game, then to me there's no doubt that they should be in the playoffs, and I'm sure they will make it. It'll be a tragedy if they don't. But you know, the Pac-12 and with USC, the surging right now that they're doing, I mean, they have really had a strong last half of the season that has put them in the, you know, the national light again, and I think overall as a conference, we had a pretty darn good year.
You talked about Washington, if they can take care of business in the Pac-12 championship. Of course, they go up against Colorado. Coach, do you believe that if Colorado was to win that game, can they compete in the Final Four? Do you think that's a team that could actually give some teams some headaches?
Well, they certainly could give teams headaches. I don't know if they'll get that opportunity because they're a two-loss team.
Right.
Is going to be hard-pressed to be able to get in the playoffs. And you know, I've been a proponent for, you know, ever since the playoffs were talked about, that it should be eight teams and all the conference champions should be invited. And I don't know how you can have five Power Five conferences and not have that amount of slots available for the playoffs. I mean, it's just too bad you can't truly play your way into it, because you can't really play your way into it necessarily, because some champion's going to be left out.
Again, our guest right now is Coach Kyle Whittingham of the Utah Ute football program. Coach, with that being said, it looks as if it would benefit you guys the most if Washington was to get the victory. It seems that the best possibilities for a bowl right now would be the Foster Farms, the Sun Bowl, or the Vegas Bowl. Do you wait anxiously for this? I mean, how does a coach approach this, not knowing what bowl you're going to yet?
Yeah, I don't lose any sleep over it. I don't lobby. I don't get out and try to get in the media and, you know, make a case for us. I just, you know, we have a body of work that we have during the course of the regular season, and if Washington does win, like you said, that does elevate them to the playoffs, then everyone bumps up a slot in the bowl picture in the conference, because obviously Washington is going a different direction. And so, but we'll just have to see. You know, like I said, just tell us when to be there and where to be and who we're playing, and that's all we need to know.
I think fans maybe sometimes neglect the fact that, in my mind, and you can tell me if I'm wrong here, the most important aspect of going to a bowl game is, hey, you get four more weeks with those underclassmen, right?
Exactly. The extra practice time, and particularly with the younger players, you know, we don't particularly keep the veterans out there for long periods of time, but we make sure we get a chance to work with the younger guys and start working on their fundamentals and techniques, because during the course of the year they don't get much of that. They've been working on the scout teams and giving us the, you know, look of the opponent, but they have not spent much time with their position coaches working the fundamentals and techniques, and so that's a great time to catch up on that and get them up to speed.
Would it be disheartening for the seniors if they were to go back to the Las Vegas Bowl?
You know, I don't know. I'd have to ask them. We really haven't talked about that, because there's so many different possibilities, and you know, there's positives. The Las Vegas Bowl is very close. Our fans can get there very easily. You know, so there's been positives to that. I think, you know, if you took a poll, they'd probably like to have just a new experience, just for the sake of having a new experience. But you know, I don't want to speak for them, and you know, we'll see what happens.
Coach, I want to go back to the struggles in 2016, and maybe it's a simplistic approach. You know, I cover a lot of high school football, and I can tell the teams that are middle of the road why they are middle of the road. You guys really struggled in the red zone this year. I mean, is that kind of a direct correlation to the four losses in your mind?
Absolutely. If we had not struggled in the red zone, we'd probably be 11-1. I mean, that's the bottom line, because we left too many points on the field, let too many scoring opportunities get away from us. And you already mentioned, you know, the four games we lost were by a total of 19 points. And if we were just average in the red zone, I believe we would have won at least three of those four ball games.
What's the most difficult aspect from a coach's standpoint once that field closes a little bit and you get inside the 20?
Well, the defense compresses and the field compresses. You know, everything is it's not as much space to work with. And so you've got to be more precise, and the windows are tighter to fit the ball in the throw game, and they load the box, you know, since you don't have to defend much turf. You know, they take the safeties out of the deep halves or the deep middle and bring them up in the box in the line of scrimmage, so running the football becomes more difficult as well. And so we as coaches just got to do a better job of putting our guys in position to be able to make plays down there and to get in the end zone, and that's going to be the focal point of the offseason.
Joe Williams was fantastic over the second half of the season, obviously, but I believe the statistic, the percentage, was like you guys scored 75% of the time inside the red zone this year. I think last year it was 91%. Is that a correlation from having a guy like Devontae Booker? I mean, does it work hand in hand?
Well, Devontae was certainly a great player for us, but really we're more concerned with touchdown percentage. A field goal in the red zone is a loss in our estimation. That, you know, if you get down inside the 20 and have to settle for a field goal, I know defensively, as a defensive coordinator, if we could hold people to field goals in the red zone, that you'd do that all day long. And so we're most interested in our touchdown percentage in the red zone, and that wasn't good either. We were below 50%. We need to be 70%. We feel if you're a very efficient, effective red zone football team, on offense, you will be able to score touchdowns 70% of the time you get in the red zone. And defensively, if you can give up 50%, then you're playing really good red zone defense. And those were our targets and our goals. And we fell short of that this year on both ends, offensively and defensively. We did not meet those goals.
I apologize, Coach. It seems like over the last 8 minutes, and I know our time is short, we've talked about nothing but negatives, and there was plenty of positives this season for the team, including Troy Williams. I mean, the touchdown-to-interception ratio improved marginally this year for you guys. I'm sure that's something to note as well offensively, right?
It was, and Troy got better as the season went on. He didn't play his best ball game on Saturday night, but as the season went on, and he got more comfortable in the offense. His production got better, and typically with a junior college player, the first year is not nearly as productive as the second year in the program. The first year they're getting acclimated to the new league and the new level of play, and you see it with just about every JC player. And in that second year, they seem to flourish, and we're hoping that's exactly what happens with Troy.
Coach, we'll end with this. What's the biggest positive in your mind about the 2016 season?
I would say that we were in the hunt well into November again, and that speaks highly of our team. And we were able to win 8 ball games. If we're able to get the bowl win, that would be a 9th win. And I think we're either tied for first or second in the Pac-12 over the course of the last 3 years for the best record. And so, again, a credit to our seniors for what they've accomplished. And we've won a lot of games. We just, as I mentioned earlier, we just have got to find a way to break through and get to that championship game.
Coach Kyle Whittingham, it's always such a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you again, Coach, for taking out the time. Best of luck in the bowl game, and hopefully we can talk again soon.
Okay, Jordan, thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
Always fun to get Coach Witt on the show. Remember, you can continue to follow the Utah Utes into the postseason. We will bring you the live broadcast of the postseason play for the Utes, be it the Foster Farms Bowl or the Sun Bowl or the Vegas Bowl, right here on KOAL. Bill Riley, Frank Dolce, they'll bring you the play-by-play call. We've got to pause for just a moment, but we do have more Drive Time Sports coming up right after this. We'll move over to talk some NFL football when we return.
This is John Wall from the Washington Wizards, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buskerings on KOAL, 7:50 a.m.
Wall shoots over Bayless. Dagger! John Wall with a career-high 47 points.
Back on Drive Time Sports, 107.3 FM, 7:50 a.m.
At Castleview,
as far as the college football talk goes and where Utah may be going next, as far as the bowl game, I talked about this yesterday. My hope is I want to see Utah go up against a Big Ten squad. Again, I think the most realistic spot for them being that they have gone to the Vegas Bowl the last couple of years. And again, this is all pending on a Washington win. Foster Farms Bowl against Indiana, I think that's probably the most likely scenario. Then you start looking at the big bowl games, you know, the New Year's Day bowl games. Everybody has their own, I guess you call them dream matchups. I mean, all they are, if you're outside of the top four, it's a glorified exhibition contest where you're looking to, again, improve the underclassmen, as Coach Witt was just talking about. It's all about practice at that point in time. I think we have the makings, the ingredients for some really good New Year's Six bowls. You know, I look at some of these. I would love to see an Auburn-Oklahoma matchup in the Sugar Bowl. Love that game. I think it'd be fantastic. Another projection that is widely possible, and that Rose Bowl, Colorado-Wisconsin. That'd be a great matchup. The one that I am a little bit down on, and I was looking at bowl projections, and I took this one from Stuart Mandel's off Fox Sports. Penn State and Western Michigan. I like Penn State a lot. And I think you could make the case for Penn State winning the Big Ten, which I believe is the best conference in college football this year. I don't want them to go up against Western Michigan. I'd like a little bit better matchup for Penn State. But the Cotton Bowl with Western Michigan is a projection that I've seen. Let's move away from college football. Let's talk NFL here for a moment. I know it's only Tuesday, 2 days away from the beginning of another NFL week as we get down to the final 5 games. Week 13 already. 5 games left. And we can talk about the playoff picture. And at this point, you can start scratching teams off. Last night was a monumental win for Green Bay. They had to have that game last night. Aaron Rodgers hooked up with Devontae Adams multiple times. I believe Devontae had 113 yards. I believe that's what Adams had in that game last night. A couple of touchdowns as well. Huge win for the Packers. you can start crossing teams off. And in the NFC, we'll start with the NFC. Get rid of San Francisco, Chicago, Los Angeles, Carolina. I'm not quite ready to give up on Arizona just yet. As far as the division race in the NFC West goes, it's a one-pony race. Seattle has pulled away with it, sitting at 7-3-1. But you give up on the other squads that I just mentioned. They're finished. That leaves Arizona, Philadelphia, Green Bay, New Orleans, Minnesota, and Tampa Bay all on the outside looking in right now. Washington would hold down the final playoff spot in the NFC because of a tie. By virtue of a tie, they would hold the final spot down in the NFC. Tampa Bay, Minnesota, both one behind in the loss column, which sets up some very interesting matchups this week, and we'll get into that in just a second. You do the same in the NFC. Cross off Cleveland at 0-12, obviously. It was hard for me to cross off Jacksonville. They're 2-9. They're finished. At 2-9, they're done. But I really thought this was the year the Jaguars would get into the playoffs. I love the way they went out. The defense, the drafting defensively over the last couple of years has been sensational for the Jaguars. I thought that Gus Bradley, this was his year. Hasn't happened. And they even started the season off with a major positive in that battle against Green Bay. Remember that game? Jacksonville's finished. The Jets are done at 3-8. Cincinnati at 3-7-1, they're done. That's it. Those are the only teams that I'm willing to cross off the list with five games to go, because a lot can still happen. And obviously, a team with four wins right now isn't mathematically eliminated, but realistically, they're eliminated. So in the AFC, that leaves San Diego, Indianapolis. Both of those squads are 5-6. Tennessee, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, and Denver on the outside looking in. Those are the teams with the most realistic chance, in my mind, of getting to the postseason. The Broncos, they would fall out because Miami holds the tiebreaker based on best win percentage in conference games. So what does all this mean for Week 13 in the NFL? I love some of these matchups. We're 2 days away from Thursday Night Football, which is huge this week. Dallas at Minnesota. And the Vikings have played very poorly as of the last 7 weeks. And it really isn't because of their defense. This is a team that was built with the identity, the defensive identity. You know, they're going to grind it out on offense. When Teddy Bridgewater went down, I sat here on the show and I said it's not that big of a deal as long as they can bring in a game manager. At that time, Adrian Peterson was still healthy. Sam Bradford has been more than adequate. However, Pat Shurmur, he knows Sam Bradford very well. Minnesota went all in to acquire him. And now, those number one picks that they gave up, it's looking worse and worse by the day. Right now, Minnesota at 6-5. Huge game against the Cowboys. They got to get this done at home. So Thursday night, we actually have a real serious, meaningful football game. Other key matchups for playoff pictures. Keep an eye on Kansas City and Atlanta this week. That's a matchup that's going to be a lot of fun. Atlanta's they've been my dark horse in the NFC all year long. Brian Mejia, our NFL insider based out of Los Angeles, he actually pegged Matt Ryan as being the MVP at the beginning of the season. Can make a case for it. 7-4 right now. Atlanta, big contest against Kansas City. The Chiefs, who snuck away with one on Sunday night against the Broncos. 7-4 right now. Or 8-3 right now, Kansas City. That's a big matchup for both teams. Detroit at New Orleans is going to be another big, big game. The Lions, I don't know if I'm willing to buy into the Lions just yet. They're 5-1 at home. 5-2 in the NFC. Matt Stafford is a guy that I think has been unfairly criticized for not, quote-unquote, winning the big game over the last couple of seasons. Detroit's playing good football. They've won three straight. They need this one against New Orleans, and New Orleans needs it badly as well. They ran into some bad luck, pulverized the Rams last week. But up to that point, they ran into bad luck against the Panthers, horrible luck against the Broncos on the blocked extra point. I think New Orleans is a pretty good team. Drew Brees is playing good football. This is going to be a fun game, huge as far as playoff matchups go. Houston and Green Bay is another one. Houston's at 6-5. They would be in the postseason because they play in that awful AFC South. One game above 500, and they would be in the postseason right now by virtue of winning their division. And so that's another game that's going to have a lot of playoff implications on it, specifically for Green Bay, who, again, they were in a must-win situation last night. They win the tiebreaker over Philadelphia, which is another team we can talk about here momentarily based on head-to-head win percentage as well. So Green Bay has another very important contest this weekend to pay attention to. Miami at Baltimore. How good are the Dolphins? That was a hot topic, and we can talk about this later on in the week as the game gets a little bit closer. But the Dolphins were 1-4. Suffered a 12-10 loss to Seattle in the opener. They battled closely with the Patriots the following week. Lost to the Bengals in fairly convincing fashion, but then you look at the teams that they have beaten consecutively. Knocked off Pittsburgh 30-15. Got past Buffalo, who was playing really good football at the time. Defeated the Jets, knocked off the Chargers. Had a brilliant come-from-behind performance to knock off the Rams on the road. Ryan Tannehill led two touchdown drives in the final couple of minutes. And then they eke one out against the 49ers. I don't know how good the Dolphins are. Ryan Tannehill was faced with a lot of criticism. When they were 1-4, people were pegging this team to have a top five pick in the draft. And right now, they're two games behind New England. And if the playoffs were to begin, they would be in, owning the current tiebreaker over the Broncos. Big game, Miami at Baltimore, and the Ravens just continue to do Raven-type things. They're sitting at 6-5. AFC North champ right now. They would win the tiebreaker over Houston based on win percentage in conference games. They would actually be the three. A lot of that, the seeding's going to work itself out. You don't have to pay attention to that yet. Giants at Pittsburgh. This is a big game as well. The Giants are 8-3, quietly 8-3. And it's one of those deals where Dallas is that good at 10-1, and you have a team that's 8-3, the second-best record in the NFC, fourth-best record in the NFL, and you'd be a 5-seed going into the postseason because the Cowboys have been that great. Big game for the Steelers. Pittsburgh actually could hold off Buffalo. They would have the tiebreaker on the Bills right now, and that's another team you have to pay attention to. But New York at Pittsburgh this Sunday, huge game there for the playoff implications. Washington at Arizona is a fun game because I don't know how good Washington is, but I don't think Arizona's very good. I love Kirk Cousins. I love the way this guy plays. And if you're a Redskin fan, odds are you've enjoyed the way he's played this season as well. That's a playoff game for the Cardinals. If they lose that, we can cross them off the list next week. Washington trying to cling to that final playoff spot. The tie does them good right now because they're able to hold off both Tampa Bay and Minnesota. And then Tampa Bay takes on San Diego. San Diego's been my disappointing team next to a Jacksonville this year. I thought perhaps that the Chargers would actually have a legitimate chance to make some noise, even after starting the dreadful 1-4 mark. You know, they topped Denver, then they beat Atlanta, and then they actually beat Tennessee in a shootout. I thought they were moving in the right direction. Suffered a loss to the Dolphins. Did beat the Texans this past weekend. Don't rule them out. One of the better 1-4 teams that you'll ever see in NFL football. Phillip Rivers has just had a fantastic season. But it's nearly a playoff game for San Diego when they take the field against Tampa Bay. And again, the Buccaneers are trying to run down the Washington Redskins. See, a lot of meaningful football coming up in Week 13 as you start separating the pretenders from the contenders. And that's a quick look at the playoff picture in the NFL. We're going to pause for just a moment. We do have more Drive Time Sports coming up. When we return, we'll put the final touches on this Tuesday edition of the show.
Hey, what's going on? This is Ron Artest, and you're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini. Shout out to Queensbridge, you already know.
Back for the final touches of this edition of Drive Time Sports. Do not forget, tonight, Utah Jazz basketball returns. David Locke, Ron Boone, they'll bring you the play-by-play call. Utah playing host to the Houston Rockets. Tip-off for that game is set at 7 p.m. And the Jazz looking to win their fourth consecutive contest. I want to close out this show by jumping back over to college football. Why not? That's the hot topic of the national scene. This was somewhat, I don't want to call it breaking news, expected news that has been released. Notre Dame quarterback Malik Zaire will reportedly meet with Brian Kelly tomorrow. He's going to receive a formal release from the school so he can seek a graduate transfer. That's Pete Sampson of Scouts Irish Illustrated releasing this story. Also talked about the contenders to sign Malik Zaire: Florida, Pittsburgh, Michigan State, and Wisconsin, the primary contenders. Zaire is going to have one season of eligibility left after he graduates in December. He also doesn't need to worry about bowl practices because Notre Dame was horrible this year at 4-8. And because of that, I think Zaire, for one reason or another, things just did not work out. I think a lot of people had high expectations for Zaire following his performance in the Music City Bowl when he won the game's MVP and Notre Dame topped LSU. And then last season, Zaire looks fantastic in the game against Texas. Notre Dame won that like 38-3, I think was the final score in that game. Zaire was fantastic. He got injured the next week against Virginia, and that was it. It was the Deshaun Kizer show from here on out. We got to see Zaire a couple of times this season. He had a couple of blunders, but in fairness to Zaire, he was put in at really difficult times. And you just, what do you expect? The biggest blow to me was the game against Virginia Tech, where the clock was running. Notre Dame needed at least to get in field goal range. Couldn't do it. Zaire, like 9 seconds run off the clock while he's calling out signals from the line of scrimmage. But again, when you sit on the bench, it's difficult. I think this guy has the ability. I don't know how good he'll be next season, but he threw for 428 yards and 4 scores in 2 games before breaking his ankle against Vautech. So he's going to be on his way out of Notre Dame. Tonight, we do get the college football playoff rankings. The projections are easy, I think, this week. Bama should be number one, obviously. They roll over Auburn. They're a lock to stay at number one. Ohio State should definitely be number two. I don't think there's any debate there. Clemson 3, Washington 4. That's what it's going to look like. 5, 6, 7, and 8 are what will make things really interesting going into conference championship weekend. Michigan. They played 4 of the top 9 teams, but they got 3 of those games and all of their wins against that group at home. And so the committee will look at that, unfortunately, as a negative. They beat Wisconsin. They beat Penn State. They beat Colorado. You lose to Ohio State for your second loss, and that's kind of the killer there for Michigan. I don't know if they're 5 or if they put Penn State above Michigan, even though Michigan beat Penn State. Penn State beat Ohio State, and they're playing in the Big Ten Championship. See, this is where it gets interesting. If Penn State is above Wisconsin, they have a chance to get to the playoffs. If they're above Wisconsin, I don't see Penn State necessarily jumping 3 teams to get into the Final Four. I guess they got to beat Wisconsin, so I guess it's possible. But I think they got to be in the top 6. I think in order for a team to jump into the Final Four, unless some crazy things happen, you have to be in the top 6 tonight. Colorado, where are they going to be? Coach Witt says he doesn't believe they're going to get the chance. I don't think they will either. Even if they win the Pac-12 championship, I don't think they get into the Final Four. Although, it's a shame, and again, Coach Witt talked about it, if we had an 8-team playoff, Pac-12 champion would be represented. 4 spots, 5 Power 5 conferences. I mean, the playoff rankings tonight are going to be very interesting. Basically, 8 up. After that, you know, you really have no chance. Maybe Oklahoma has a slim chance to sneak in, barring some massive chaos. If Oklahoma's behind Colorado, there's probably no way they get in because they're not going to jump Washington. And if Colorado was to get the win, they're not going to jump Colorado. Oklahoma State, USC probably floats around the 11-10 mark. Again, I think from 8 up is what really matters tonight, and that's what's going to be interesting. We know who 1 through 4 is. So give us 5, 6, 7, and 8. And that'll give us some talking points on the show tomorrow. I definitely have to thank Coach Kyle Whittingham for taking out the time to join us. Always great to catch up with him. Tomorrow's show, we're going to talk more NFL football. We're going to talk some local JUCO basketball. USU Eastern will make the return to KOAL this weekend. A couple of home games, even though they've lost 6 straight, they'll try to get back on the winning track. You can keep up with them at CastleCountryRadio.com and get your recap on their weekend journey to Wyoming. So we'll talk local and national on the show tomorrow. Remember to check out CastleCountryRadio.com and click on the Drive Time Sports link, and you can listen to all the archived interviews at CastleCountryRadio.com. Out of time today. Again, we'll be back tomorrow to do it again. Same time, same place. Be safe. I'm out.